Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, December 8th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mdenda says lawmakers must scrutinize the so-called mega deals signed by Zimbabwe and China last week and ensure that they benefit the people.
These mega deals that have been signed, make sure they are implemented. That is our job. I think my mega deals are not signed so much million of dollars. They must be translated into action.
Scores of desperate villagers in Masvingo province are selling wild fruits in a bid to earn a living due to a devastating drought.
We are only surviving on selling these white fruits, matamba, mashanje, matowe, but mainly our source of income is mashanje, since it is the most.
And the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it will commemorate this year's Human Rights Day on Thursday by making a critical analysis of some provisions of Zimbabwe's constitution.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, we are working jointly with Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum. We have partnered, like we always do with the NGO Forum, in organizing an interactive dialogue which will be held on Thursday, the 20th of December, which is International Human Rights Day.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The Speaker of the National Assembly, Jacob Mdenda, says the lawmakers must scrutinize the so-called mega deals signed between Harare and Beijing last week and ensure that they benefit local people. He says the state should always ensure that public funds are used in a transparent way. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Speaking at a one-day post-budget seminar today, Mdenda said all public funds must be fully accounted for.
These mega deals that have been signed, make sure they are implemented. That is our job. I think my mega deals are not signed so much million of dollars. They must be translated into action. As they get translated into action, jobs are created, our GDP growth is assured.
He said political affiliation should not deter lawmakers from critically examining the 2016 budget and holding the executive accountable for anything related to state coffers. The speaker lamented the fact that the public wage bill was compromising the fiscus as it was chewing more than 80% of the $4 billion budget. It was worrying. He said that the 2016 growth projections at 2.7% were way below the 7.3% projected by the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIMASET. Economist Godfrey Kanyenze of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe told lawmakers they must ensure that a national budget prioritizes people's issues. He said Zimbabwe had vast resources, but little or nothing was being done to ensure that they benefited people.
But now we drive all these luxuries almost like David Beckham's. We are like celebrities. And we are going to very poor people. That's the irony, isn't it? We don't even think about it. And this is the reality about Zimbabwe. We are struggling on minor things. We are majoring on minors and minoring on majors.
While the finance minister projects that the country's economy will grow by 2.7% next year, Kanyenze says Zimbabwe's growth may not go beyond the 1.5% mark given the effects of drought worsened by the El Nino weather phenomenon.
But even this 2.7%, when you look at the context of declining international commodities, of a possible drought this year, you may actually struggle to actually do better than this year. So it may actually be heroic to assume that we will grow at 2.7% more than we did this year, given that the conditions, the circumstances may actually be deteriorating.
Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti told members of his People's Democratic Party that the economy would contract by between 3 to 8%.
the growth projections of 2.7%. That's not possible. The underlying basis of that assumption is not there. We have no power. We are in the middle of a terrible rain season. Companies are closing, so there is no output. The GDP is a measure of output, so that is not possible.
Kanyenze urged parliamentarians to force government to ensure that resources are allocated appropriately, especially to ministries that deal with the people's socio-economic rights, such as health and education. Lawmakers will debate the 2016 budget next week and are expected to approve it with little or no amendments. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Scores of desperate villagers in Maswingo province are flooding the Harare Bight Bridge Road, selling wild fruit to travelers in a bid to earn a living due to a devastating drought that's ravaging the region. Our correspondent Gandri Maramba has more details.
Villagers who spoke to Studio 7 today said they are forced to pick wild fruits in the bush and sell to their clients traveling in buses and private vehicles so that they can earn a living. With the current drought gripping the province, most villagers said they no longer have food reserves. They have resorted to selling wild fruits that include majanje, matamba and matowe, among others. This time of the year, the villagers are selling majanje, which are fetching reasonable prices. Most of them use the money to buy food and other basic necessities. Tawanda Mandiva of Guru District says he wakes up early in the morning to sell his fruits. He says he makes between $10 and $20 per day.
Because of the hunger that we are facing in the rural areas, we are now waking up very early in the morning to go and look for these wild fruits we call majanje in Shona. We used to do that a long time ago without any pressure, but now because of this hunger, a lot of people are now coming to also take the majanje and go by the roadside to sell. However, we are also getting a living out of it because I can get $10 a day to feed my family. We have to do that because we have nothing more to survive on.
Edward Rizzi of Darikai village in Zumuto communal lands said the highway has become a source of income and the wild fruits are helping them to get money to send their children to school.
Matamba are helping us a lot since there's no rain here in Zimbabwe. We are only surviving on selling these wild fruits, matamba, majanje, matowe. But mainly our source of income is majanje since it is the most delicious food to most residents. This highway, Maswingo Bight Bridge Highway, is our main source of income. Since we sell them to people who are going to Harare, we are going to South Africa, and even local people also sell the matamba and mashuku. I hope the rains will come and survive. Now we are now able to buy food, meal for our children. And our surviving the school fees, we are now able to pay for our children from the selling of these fruits.
Lucia Gandu, a widow who lives at Baringire Business Center in Chivi, said gathering wild fruits and selling them along the highway has become a blessing as she is managing to cater for the needs of her children.
I'm a widowed woman. I wake up every day in the morning and take some mashanje on the road and sell them so that I can manage to keep my children since I am not employed.
Some of these fruits used to be some kind of luxury when Zimbabwe's economy was still vibrant soon after independence. Local people say they have now been reduced to street vendors due to current economic hardship worsened by the drought. This is Gandri Maramba for Studio 7 in Maswingo.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it will commemorate this year's Human Rights Day on Thursday by making a critical analysis of some provisions of Zimbabwe's constitution. Spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda says they will hold a discussion that will look at the way the government is handling the new constitution and human rights issues. This year's Human Rights Day commemorations coincide with missing activist Itai Dzamara of Occupy Africa Unity Square, marking 9 full months since his abduction by unknown assailants. Mafunda tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri they will try to engage the government through the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission that they have invited to attend the discussions.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, we are working jointly with Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum. We have partnered, like we always do with the NGO Forum, in organizing an interactive dialogue which will be held on Thursday, the 10th of December, which is International Human Rights Day. We are going to be holding an interactive dialogue focusing on taking stock on constitutionalism in Zimbabwe, making a progress that we targeted for the debate. So we thought that to create a platform for Zimbabweans, if they commemorate mark or celebrate National Human Rights Day, then they need to derogate issues to do with constitutionalism. How is our government faring in terms of implementing and observing the obligations that they committed to in this government charter?
This day coincides with Itai Dzamara missing for 9 months. What are you going to do?
The issue of enforced disappearances and abduction really worry us as a double layer for human rights. Let us alone of the abduction of Itai, including the disappearance of Portuguese, the disappearance of Nabanyana, and several other Zimbabweans who cannot be accounted for. So this is part one area whereby we definitely raise questions about, and we remain concerned by that disappearance and the lack of progress in locating those people.
How are you going to involve the government in this whole process?
We are here to the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, the National Processing Authority, and the Judicial Service Commission with the representatives during that dialogue, which will be moderated by Mr. Deborah Michena.
That was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda in Harare with Jonga Kandemiri.
Meanwhile, as the world prepares to commemorate Human Rights Day, human rights lawyer Kenneth Masie says young Zimbabweans remain blinded to their rights enshrined in the country's constitution. Masie tells Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo, young people are failing to understand their economic, social, cultural, civil, and political rights, leaving them susceptible to be used as political pawns.
The youth are the ones that are being used because we don't know. So, you know, as we speak about Human Rights Day, we're speaking about the right to know as youth. We need to know information. No, information should not be stifled by people who are holding it. Because if you, even if you look at the new constitution right now, there's so many rights that are elaborated in the constitution, but the youth are so ignorant of all those rights. That's why you see people, you know, engaging in public violence because they don't know if you engage in public violence. What are you doing? Are you advancing your human rights? Are you infringing your human rights? So it's more of the right to know when it comes to the Human Rights Day. Us as youth, we need to know. We need to advance the right to know.
But what can really be done on this issue? Because, of course, there are many organizations that have been working to make sure young Zimbabweans know their rights. But what exactly is going on? Where is the point being missed?
You see, the point that is being missed is most of these organizations, of course, I give credit to them because they talk about human rights. But, you see, some of us youth are more inclined to, you know, talking about the economic benefit for the engagement. You know, if you go into the community and you want to talk about rights, some of the youth are, you know, say that what is it in for? It's more like the economic benefit. And some of us youth are not looking at the intellectual benefit. We're not looking at, you know, the knowledge that we gain. We're not looking about the economic benefit in the long run, because if we talk about human rights, we're talking about several rights that are in the Constitution, we're talking about rights that if they are observed, the economic benefit then comes in the long run. But
that was Harare-based human rights lawyer Kennedy Masie on the line with Studio 7.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the Institute of Directors Zimbabwe appoints a new team to lead its operations.
And Zimbabweans living in Botswana express concern over delays in processing work permits.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A day after U.S. President Barack Obama said the fight against the Islamic State militant group should not be defined as one between America and Islam, the White House is reinforcing that message while urging Muslim Americans in the United States to do their part. Mr. Obama says the U.S. would like to see leaders in the Muslim community stand up and speak out more forcefully in terms of condemning, quote, these hateful, radicalizing messages that we see from extremist organizations. In his address to the American people Sunday, President Obama said the terrorist group Islamic State does not speak for Islam and noted the millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. He spoke out against intolerance, discrimination, and divisiveness.
The strategy that we are using now, airstrikes, special forces, and working with local forces who are fighting to regain control of their own country, that is how we'll achieve a more sustainable victory. And it won't require us sending a new generation of Americans overseas to fight and die for another decade on foreign soil. Here's what else we cannot do. We cannot turn against one another by letting this fight be defined as a war between America and Islam. That, too, is what groups like ISIL want. ISIL does not speak for Islam. They are thugs and killers, part of a cult of death. And they account for a tiny fraction of a more than a billion Muslims around the world, including millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. Moreover, the vast majority of terrorist victims around the world are Muslim. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies, rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. That does not mean denying the fact that an extremist ideology has spread within some Muslim communities. There's a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like ISIL and Al-Qaeda promote, to speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama addressing Americans Sunday. He made his remarks a few days after two people linked to ISIS killed 14 Americans attending a Christmas party in California.
A South African judge has granted bail to Oscar Pistorius after an appeals court last week convicted him of murder. The Olympic athlete appeared in court today to hear whether he would remain under house arrest while awaiting a new sentencing for the murder conviction, which is tied to the 2013 shooting death of his girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp.
And Iraqi government troops have retaken parts of Ramadi from Islamic State fighters that seized the city earlier this year.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, and we are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
The The Institute of Directors of Zimbabwe, or IODZ, recently appointed a new team to lead its operations, with prominent lawyer and commercial arbitrator Susan Mutangadura being selected as chairperson, taking over from Eve Gadzikwa, who served for two terms. The IODZ, which considers itself a training institute, believes Zimbabwe needs to promote corporate governance in both public and private institutions, saying it is a prerequisite for a vibrant economy. Advantage Communications CEO Evans Zekias Kurangwa is Mutangadura's deputy. He says in conducting its business, the institute upholds integrity, accountability, transparency, innovativeness, among other issues, as it works with other stakeholders to help revive the country's ailing economy. He tells us why the IODZ is an important institute to Zimbabwe's economy.
It plays an important role, because our work deals with the ensuring in the current environment that there are best practices at board level so that we navigate through the tough economic terrain that we are experiencing. More importantly, so as to limit the company closures that we have been experiencing late. Indeed, the tail potential collapse of state enterprises. It has 97 state enterprises, and with poor governance, this could lead to the collapse of those organizations. And one could also argue that the Institute of Directors is more relevant in this environment, where issues of corporate governance have been thrust into the fore, and where there is a clear need to strengthen the competencies of and support directors as they grapple with the challenges that we face in this economy. Directors face the challenge of having to innovate, because we are surviving in a global economy, and as you are always surviving in a global economy, you have to be the best so as to compete.
How would you say business is going in Zimbabwe at the moment? How is the economy vis-a-vis your own activities as a business person?
It's certainly tough, but as an individual, I've always known that for you to succeed, you've got to do well with the chips are high or the chips are low. We, like I said earlier, directors and businesses in Zimbabwe have had to be innovative, and not only innovative, but we have a liquidity problem. There's no liquidity, and basically, for example, with two subsidiaries, communication and the flooring. On the flooring side, companies are no longer spending as much on capital development. So because of that, it means you've got to be creative in your business model, right? In terms of flooring, people have more new projects. After new projects, people really refurbish development. So it's been tough, but we've had to be super innovative. And I would say, to my advantage, mixing and mingling with the top guys has helped me, because I've approached most of all of them with an open ear to say, look guys, we're into this business, we're facing this challenge. And that's how you let's give you an example. Last 2 weeks ago, we had an excellent presentation on sustainable leadership. We are asked to, the speaker was calling upon businesses to see themselves in 100 years, to come up with strategies that will get you to 100 years. Now, you know, I just wish that every other business person in Zimbabwe was there. The week before that, we had something on ethical leadership. You know, if you look at our Transparency International rating, it's certainly not pleasing, but look, we certainly think we can work through it. But just imagine if we all took those ethical discussions seriously, I'm sure we'll take our country forward.
And just as a last question, I understand that you were awarded the 2014 Mega First Entrepreneur of the Year Award by the Zimbabwe National Chamber of Commerce. How does it feel as a young Zimbabwean to be recognized in such a way? And what are you doing to make sure that you actually continue to grow from where you were up, you know, to go to those higher echelons of business?
Firstly, praise be to God. because I'm sure in the beginning of the Lord, it's the Lord that has given us the opportunity. So the award for innovation was simply the fact that we were able to take delegates, mostly from companies in Zimbabwe, both private and state enterprises, on what we call development courses. We do not say training because we're simply saying, for example, Sandra went through some tertiary education, but after education, we then joined the job market. So when you're in the job market, after 2-3 years, when we take you to the school, we are simply saying, right, Sandra, you went through tertiary education, you were taught how to do something, but now you are hands-on onto the job. We think that now that you are on the job, you've got to do other things to develop your skills. So it's quite, I assure you, an interesting prospect. We ran over 20 courses from 10 different professions, from executive assistants, public relations officers, right up front office staff.
Evans Zekaya Skurangwa is the CEO at Advantage Communications in Harare.
A Botswana Minister of Labour and Home Affairs recently called a meeting with concerned stakeholders following concerns over delays in the issuing and rejection of work permits for foreigners. Zimbabweans at more than one-third, that is 6,000 out of 16,000 applicants, constitute the majority of Botswana permit holders. They have consistently complained about delays and what they feel are unjustified rejections of their applications. The meeting was held at Botswana President Ian Khama's insistence. Labour and Home Affairs Minister Edwin Bachu was not available for comment as he was said to be busy.
A former legendary Dynamos player and board member Freddy Mkwesha died in Harare today following a long battle with diabetes. Dynamos club chairman Kenny Mubayiwa confirmed the death and told Studio 7 the legend will be hard to replace, as he did not only have an illustrious career but was also an advisor to the team players and the board.
We saddened by the death of Fred Mkwesha. He was an icon. He is one of the founder members of the Dynamo Football Club. To us, he was someone who was helpful to the club. Even I think the club is the president, was getting advice from him. So I think as Dynamo Football Club, we have lost a person who was very important to the club.
What legacy will Mr. Mkwesha leave? Tell us about his career.
Mr. Mkwesha started playing soccer major for us. And during his playing career, he played for Dynamo. And after playing for Dynamo, he was the first African to play in Portugal. He played in Portugal. He was a great player. He's known. We are also going to send a message to the team that he was playing for that he is no more.
Are there any arrangements that are now in place at the moment? And what role are you going to play as Dynamo?
Mr. Mkwesha passed on today at 7 o'clock in the morning. So we are going to meet at 6 p.m. With the Mkwesha family, and from there we're going to have a meeting. After the meeting, we'll then let people know the final arrangement. But the Dynamo Football Club, we are going to see to that we send him off in a respected manner.
That was the Dynamo's chairman, Kenny Mubayiwa, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Harare. Maybe, Chris, before we go, we need to apologize to our listeners. Yesterday, it was a big letdown. We had a fault, a technical fault. So as a result, we could not deliver our programming as scheduled. We sincerely apologize for the inconvenience.
And also remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host of The Connection will lead discussions on youth and human rights issues.
To join the discussion, please text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
A Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mdenda says lawmakers must scrutinize the so-called mega deals signed between Zimbabwe and China last week.
Scores of desperate villagers in Masvingo province are selling wild fruits in a bid to earn a living due to a devastating drought.
And the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it will commemorate this year's Human Rights Day on Thursday by making a critical analysis of some provisions of the country's constitution.
That's our broadcaster this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com. For more on our top stories, you can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com or text us at the following number 001-202-465-0318.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Placidus Jeremiah. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.